Now, there are some folks who have come to the meeting, and they have had a lot of men teachers. They haven't had any women teachers. And it kind of took them aback, because I'm a real joyful person, and I don't believe that this has to be serious. And thank you. And so I just need to tell all the new people, I love to laugh. I believe that if you are fully in divine consciousness, your high joy is like unbelievable, and you're there all the time, no matter what happens. And when things unfold that appear to be less than love, which we all have in our lives, do we not? Because we're here in human form, then we get to embrace them in a completely different way than we did before we realized that we could have joy in our lives all the time. So for those individuals who have had really powerful male teachers, I praise and bless every single one of them, and that's not my path. This time I said several of my soul agreements. Soul agreements, for those of you who are new, are the agreements we make prior to coming into the body about what we're going to experience this time. And we may or may not fulfill them, depending on how the family is that we've chosen and how much work we really want to do and how disciplined we are, because it takes a lot of discipline to grow in consciousness. You can wander around in the embodiment and say, gosh, that was a really interesting embodiment. I just wandered around the whole time. Or, you know, you could say, this embodiment, I'm really not going to wander around. I'm going to anchor myself into my body. I'm going to be fully aware of what's going on. I will work on having a self-awareness all the time. And one of the reasons that we sit in this room is so that we can raise our vibration. Now, why would we want to raise our vibration? The reason that we do this is because every time, even the tiniest increment of raising the vibration in any one of your four lower bodies, physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual, the opportunity then to practice that new level of vibration until we meet the next time. And if you do it in these small increments, it's so much easier than someone saying, you've got to shoot for the moon, and if you miss, oh well. I don't believe that. I believe that if you do it in the inchworm fashion, which is this, just that much, every time we gather, if we raise that vibration and then we practice holding it, and I assure you that in the week that you are practicing, things are going to happen. And you're going to want to lower your vibration. And you might want to be a little pissy. You might be a little angry. You might be a little judgmental, huh? You might be a little, oh, I feel sorry for myself today. You might have a few of those moments. Now, those moments will occur, but if you know that that's not the real deal, those energies have occurred, why? So that you can hold your vibration. Can you practice doing that and not drop down and say, it's just like this now? Can you maintain this, observe what has unfolded, and then embrace it with love and compassion for yourself as you go through whatever you're going through? Now, most of us, I never learned compassion. Didn't even know that word until a couple of years ago, and I said, I wonder what that word means. Compassion means that you now have empathy for who you are. You are empathetically responding to what's happening within you and around you. And you have empathy for the other and have compassion for them and what they are experiencing. And this is huge, because it means that we no longer say, I'm separate from you, therefore I don't have to bother about what's going on in your world. The truth is, everybody is us. Everybody is us. There's not one person on the planet that is not our teacher, and not one person on the planet that is not us. We have all embodied so that we can have that empathetic response no matter what it looks like. And you have to have a very strong spiritual muscle to be able to hold the energies that we are invited to hold, particularly in this time on the earth plane. There are many, many vibrations occurring on the earth plane that we could look at and say, that's bad, that's wrong, you get what I'm saying? That's dark, that's this, that's that. If you really are going to hold the vibration, you no longer work from that point of view. You look at what is happening and you say, my love can hold this. My love can embrace what is unfolding. And if by doing that, and if you choose to do that, it means that you have come into a loving embrace with anything that was judging that out there. Okay? You have said, I'm not going to judge that. Because that's me out there. Some aspect of me is talking to me, and if I have a judgment around it, then where does that judgment begin? Within myself. It means that I judge me, and therefore I will judge that. Now, I grew up with a family, as perhaps many of you did, a lot of judgment. That was a bad little girl, good little girl, you know, those kind of judgments. And not good enough, do it better, that wasn't right, this is wrong. All those levels of energy that deeply imprinted us as children. And we chose the families that we came into to get the very lessons that we got so that we could do what? Change the vibration of them as we began to wake up. The more we awaken, the less we are willing to judge anyone, particularly ourselves. Now, many of us had the critical parent talking to us, you know, left side of the brain, yakety yak yak. Everybody nod your heads up and down if you know that what that is. Okay. If you know what that is, then you are clear that what you want to be able to do is to say to that critical parent voice, thank you, but now I'm going to move to the right side of my brain and I'm going to have compassion for myself and I will have compassion for you. For every word that has been less than love that was spoken to us when we were children. And to be able to embrace that. Now that means that you have to have such a level of self-awareness. Because, I don't know about you, suddenly there'll be a little drama running around here on the left side of my brain, you know? And I'll go, oh, wait. I didn't quite catch that soon enough. I kind of got sucked into it. And then I have to go, that's all right, Mary. That was a very good thing that just happened, because now you get to see what is the part of that story that you got hooked on so that the storyteller continued to hook you with that particular story. And then you get to say, wait a minute, I don't really need to hear that story anymore. And I give thanks. I do not condemn or in any way judge that the story has been told. I say thank you, I've heard that story, and I no longer need to hear that story. So I ask my ego conscious mind, which is where the storyteller is on the left side of the brain, to say thank you, I love you, and that's not a story that I want to hear anymore. And I don't hear it anymore. Something else is going to be told. And it will be told then through my soul, through this right side of my brain, and often my soul will give me an awareness of why that particular story or that particular judgment was so powerfully in place still, and then how I can transform it. Now this takes a level of self-awareness. You have to really be self-aware of what is going on, and then you're at choice in every moment, are you not? Mm-hmm. Will I judge this or myself? Will I get angry? I mean, I know how to do what they call, at least in the South, they call it a hissy fit. Anybody know about a hissy fit? Yeah. Hissy fits are where you just, you know, I mean, you just hit the button and the hissy fit starts. And everybody knows what it is. Everybody says, oh, she's having a hissy fit. Well, the truth is that I don't want to do hissy fits anymore. It's been a long time since I've had one. And I can approach one. God knows when you're in a relationship, if you want a button to be pressed, it will be pressed, will it not? And so I approach it and I go, no, we're not going there. But it is that level of self-awareness that allows me to know that I'm approaching it. Before I just jump, and now I'm aware of what that is. So that is always going to be part of our discussion. Raising the vibration every time we come, and then the practice of holding that vibration and holding it mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. Because one of our bodies may be out of alignment, and we want to be sure that we're aligned in all of our bodies because we're still in human form. And so our desire is that from a heartfelt place, we can have compassion for ourselves and enable ourselves then to have a more loving expression in the outer world. Tonight I wanted to talk a little bit about beliefs, and I'm reading from this magnificent book, which is called Love Poems from God. I'm a mystic, and these are mystics from many cultures, many traditions, and many religions.
Excuse me, is there a restroom here in case we need to go to the restroom?
Yes, right through that door. Yeah. Sorry, we used to have a sign, but it disappeared. So it's right through there, and the ladies' room is the furthest restroom. This is Meister Eckhart, whom I have read before, and he was from 1260 until 1328. He is one of history's greatest mystics, and he was a Catholic monk and a scholar, and because of his clarity and his ability to speak from the pulpit with such amazing energy, the church became very jealous of him, and they wanted to stop his teachings. And he, bless his heart, died before they were able to take any action to call him a heretic. And this is one of the things that he said. This is not a holy trinity. The firmament, the earth, our bodies. And it is not an act of worship to hold a child or till the soil or lift the cup. And communion, first seek that from your lover's soul before you seek anything that is offered from a priest. Yipes! Okay, that is very powerful. And considering the time in which he came, he was an extraordinary man. A man born blind can easily deny the magnificence of a vast landscape. He can easily deny all the wonders that he cannot touch, smell, taste, or hear. But one day the wind will show its kindness and remove the tiny patches that cover your eyes, and you will see God more clearly than you have ever seen yourself. Someday you will hear all things applaud your wonder. Life claps in awe of the divine performance. When your veil is removed, you, dear, you, everyone, will see that your being is holy. Raising their children is a primary care and purpose of some. This is a blessed state, for an oasis of love is found in the desert. The heart only reflects the sky when it is giving and compassionate. Who would want to stand before a mirror that is shattered and thus distorts our beauty? That is so fragile as we grow. An oasis for all life the soul becomes when it is unveiled. So here we're talking about a veil, and we're talking about patches upon the eye. And these are symbols of not being able to have the clarity within to know the truth of who you are in every moment. And when we gather together, what we do is to open the veil, and if you need it in your life, you will cover again with the veil, or you will allow the veil to drop away. And if you have patches on your eyes where you still say, I'm not willing to see what's really going on here, that's all right. But then the wind, which is that absolute presence of your soul, will simply remove them when you are ready. And only when you are ready will this occur. Because once this has been removed and the veils have been dropped, then you are fully present and fully awake within your soul countenance. Now this is the poet speaking. But in our own lives, we all have energies that are less than love and how we view them and work with them. So tonight I wanted to work with beliefs because we have some beliefs that are like this and we have other beliefs that are like the veil. And these beliefs were given to us very early on, we are literally imprinted with the beliefs of our mothers and fathers that we had and gained from our children, from them to us, and they, when they were children, from their parents, and so on and so on. This is called that transgenerational patterning that occurs. So if we look at some of our beliefs, and I want to mention three beliefs from my childhood. I grew up in a foreign country, so I did not have these beliefs early on because they weren't in the culture. So when I came to the United States and I had these three beliefs given to me, I thought they were rather remarkable. And you may laugh because I found them very astounding when I was preparing for this evening. The first is the tooth fairy. The second is the Easter Bunny. And the third was Santa Claus. Now, these were beliefs that my parents knew, and they passed them on to me. So the first time I lost a tooth, I was given a dime. And I was told, now, this little coin is very important, and you need to put it in your piggy bank, which I didn't even know what that was, but I found out was a little pig, and you put it in your piggy bank, and it's very important, and it has worth. It's worth something, so you don't lose it, and every time you lose a tooth, you're going to get another coin and put it in there. Well, that was my first experience with money. I went, this is very far out. I lose a tooth, and I get this thing that is very, very wonderful, and it's supposed to be so terrific that I've got to put it in this very safe place, and nobody can see it because of the little piggy. You know, I look in there, that little slot, you know, and go, gosh, it's still there, you know? I've got my little dime. How wonderful. So that was my introduction to money, which is pretty fabulous. Then the Easter Bunny came along. I mean, I didn't have a clue, and we got up Easter, and all my siblings and I, we gathered around, and here were these little colored eggs and all kinds of stuff. And I had never had chocolate up to that moment. And they used to have, and maybe they still do, these little solid chocolate eggs, you know, and it has little colored paper around it, and that's all kind of wonderful. And you peel it off, and then here's this brown thing. Brown thing. And everyone said, oh, you got to eat that. It's really good. And I said, I don't know. Who would want to eat a brown thing? If it's a green thing or a yellow thing, but a brown thing, you got to be kidding me. And of course, I didn't really trust my older brother and sister at all whatsoever. And they said, eat this. I said, you have got to be kidding me. I said, okay, I can do this. So I said, all right, I'm just going to take a little itty bitty bite of this little itty bitty brown thing and see what it is. And I took a bite, and I went, oh, I'm in trouble now. This stuff is really good. So I thank the Easter Bunny for inviting chocolate into my life, and how wonderful that was. And the third thing was, of course, Santa Claus. And we grew up in a country where you just went to the beach at Christmas. And so we'd go to the beach, and my mother, who had grown up in very cold winters, we'd talk about snow, and she would describe the snow and what it was like. And, you know, here we are at the beach, you know. And we'd say, yeah, Mom, right, mm-hmm. And it falls from the sky, and it's white, and it's this, that. And we'd go, sure. I mean, we had no idea. We didn't have a picture of it. We didn't have a clue. So we came to the United States, and the first time we saw snow, it was like, and we were living in New York at the time, and it was like, whoa, it's true. And we were just, you know, rolling in it and laughing and having such a good time. And we went to a store, and there was a guy all dressed up in red with the white hair and everything. And Mother said, that's Santa Claus. And we were all very skeptical. We said, so? And Mother said, well, that's who brings the gifts on Christmas. We said, oh, he's the guy. You know, we've been reading about him, but here he is in the flesh and blood. Well, I never got to sit in his lap. I was never allowed to do that. We always had to be moving on to the next thing. And years went by, and some years ago, I did the Hoffman process. Maybe some of you all have done it. And one of the processes you do, one of the instructors dresses up as Santa Claus. So here was Santa Claus, and I went, this is very far out. You know, I come here to do this process to cleanse and clear all my patterning on my mother and father's side, and here's Santa. And Santa said, well, you know, if you'd like to come and sit in my lap, you're welcome to. And I thought, oh my God, you know, I'm going to go and sit in the lap of Santa Claus. I was just like gleeful. I couldn't believe it. I said, I didn't realize that the child within really wanted to have that experience. And I never really had that experience. And it was being offered to me. So I raised my hand, you know, and so I sat in his lap and he said, little girl, you know, what do you want for Christmas? Oh gosh, I was totally unprepared for that question. Because no one had ever asked me, what do you want for Christmas? Not in my childhood, I'd never received that question. So I thought, gosh, you know, and because we were, you know, trying to be high-minded during the process, I said, well, you know, I just want love and beauty and wonder. And, you know, he went, come on, get real. What do you really want, you know? And I said, maybe some chocolate. He said, fine, and off I went. That connection of energy through my lifetime into my adulthood allowed me to see how many beliefs we have. Some that we take on and we say, oh, this belief really works for me. And other beliefs we look at and say, I don't really think this belief works for me. And as we grow and begin to express the fact that we don't believe that that belief is the belief that we want to believe, and our parents say, you have to believe this belief. This is a very important belief. Did anybody have that experience? I certainly did. And when I chose my profession, they said, we don't believe you should do that. And I said, well, I believe I must. So I did. But as a result of that, a lot of beliefs had to change. And a lot of those beliefs felt like laws. I had to break laws. Do you understand what I'm saying? They were so deeply entrenched in the family entity. And when I speak of family entity, I mean every family has an entity unto itself. And every member and all the generations are part of that entity. And it's very powerful. Very powerful. And when you break a law within that entity, then the responsibility of what happens the moment you do rests solely on your shoulders. And I had many times looked at what I considered the laws of my family, and I said, those laws do no longer fit in the cosmology of the consciousness which I carry. And it was very difficult to be able to describe to my siblings who were aligning with the cosmology and all of those energies that were in the family entity. They were holding that energy. That was who they were, and they wanted that. They chose that, and I said, this is not for me. Those beliefs are not nurturing to me. And yet how to express that was very hard. And so I simply had to quietly realize that within myself, I would release that belief system or that law, that energy that no longer felt in alignment with who I had become. At one point, my elder brother, I'd come back from New York, I'd been dancing in New York for a while, and he took me into his room and he shut the door and he said, Mom and Dad have something they want me to say to you. I went, whoops. He was the spokesperson. And what they had to say, my mom and dad, and gave John, my brother, the one to speak it, was the following. We do not like who you have become. You are no longer a member of our family. And we do not want you to be this way. We want you to change back to who you were because who you are now is not part of our family. I got on a plane the next day and went back to New York. And I said, wow. This is also a belief. My brother was, you know, they say laying down the law. He was laying down the beliefs and saying, you're not in alignment with those beliefs any longer, okay? Now, maybe you all have had some of the experiences, maybe not as blatant as that, but where you have had to say, I have moved out of the energy of the family entity, and I am now here. I am observing the entity, and I appreciate and give thanks for everything that the entity, that entity has brought to me. But who I am must now grow beyond the entity. must become what I am outside of the entity. And each one of us who are sitting in this room, we have stepped to a certain degree outside of the family entity to sit in this room. That's part of what happens. When you decide that there is a path and you will put your foot upon the path, you may spend lifetimes in preparation to put your foot on the path. Or you may observe many who are on the path for many lifetimes and then decide, this is what I want to do in this lifetime. Understand, we have all prepared. I used this embodiment and that family entity so that I could do what? Break away. That's the divine order that was happening. That was in divine order. And I was strong enough to say, I am that which I am, and I will stand where I stand. And that is the truth for me. It may not be the truth for anybody else, but it is the truth for me. And to stand in that truth is a very, very powerful thing. And until and unless we allow ourselves to see the totality of our family entity and take from it that which nourishes us and supports us and is true to who we are, then that is truth. And if it is not, then we step outside. But it doesn't mean we don't go back in. I went to my mother before she passed, and I said, Mom, I need to tell you what's really going on with me. And I just need to say it, because the next time I come to see you, you will not know who I am unless I share this with you. And I shared everything, all my unfoldment, everything that had been happening through my life, in my life, in my mystical consciousness, everything. And when I was done, she looked at me and she said, I don't believe a word you've said. And I said, Mother, it doesn't make any difference. You don't have to believe a word I say, but I have spoken my truth to you. And that was the most important thing I could do. So I go away. I'm called back several months later. I come to see her. And she turned to me and she said, are you still doing that thing that you were doing? And I said, yes, Mother, I'm still doing that thing that I'm doing. She said, oh, I'm so afraid you might stop doing that thing you were doing. She couldn't name it, but she knew in her heart of hearts that because I had expressed the truth of my being, it's not about belief. I don't expect anybody to believe anything I say in this room. If it doesn't resonate with you, that's fine. Who cares? Because what's really going on in this room, I'm just here to occupy the left side of your brain so that through the right side of your brain, your soul is just zooming in, just brrr. Because as I'm talking, the left side going, what the hell is he talking about her? What's this? What's all that? It didn't make any difference, folks. We're here because what's happening is the energy of that divine consciousness is literally flooding into every single cell of our body while we're sitting here. And when you leave this room, that doesn't change. That doesn't go away just because you leave this room. But it's up to you to say, well, now that I've had this thing happen, do I really feel it? Maybe. Okay, this energy has come into me. So how will I look at the next situation that appears to be something that maybe the moment before I judged? And I'm not going to judge it now. I can look at it and have compassion for it, but I do not have to judge it. This is huge. If just once in every day, you say, I'm not judging this. I'm not judging myself. I'm not judging this situation. I'm not judging the other. I'm not doing that today. I'm going to love whatever is unfolding. And even when it doesn't feel good, because the ego always wants to be loved. And so one of our primary jobs, it seems to me, is to bring all the love that we have unto ourselves. And to that measure, that will be the measure that we give to everybody else, won't it? If you withhold from self, you're going to withhold from others. You will do it. And at the end of the day, you know, I've asked you to scan your days. I hope some of y'all have been doing that as a practice. If you scan your day at the end of the day, and you look, all right, what has been the stream of consciousness I've had? Have I been judgmental during this day to myself or another? Look at that. Have I spoken the truth of my being? Have I been clear? Have I spoken lovingly? When I could have chosen to be either sharp or have a hissy fit, but I didn't. I did something else instead. And what about my emotional body? Did I have feelings that were roiling and broiling in there, and I let them roil and broil? But I had, for the inner life of who I am, an exterior and an interior that allowed for peace. So I could be peaceful, even if this is being churned up. It's all right if it gets churned up, because you recognize, you say, oh, I'm a little churned up about this. How interesting. But you're not active or reactive around it. You simply say, I'm a little churned up. But the peace, which passeth understanding, then flows through you, and the emotional body can become very quiet. And it is very peaceful then, within and without, regardless of what the drama is out here, dears. Because there's lots of drama out here, and it can snatch us at any moment. But if it doesn't, if we're able to hold that beautiful energy within, then of course it will radiate without. Now that doesn't mean that life is going to be a piece of cake. We didn't come to the earth plane for a piece of cake. We came to the earth plane to be fully human and fully divine. Okay? Fully human and fully divine. And how we weave those two together moment to moment to moment is our practice, is it not? Okay? So, if you then look at your physical body, so we've done our mental body, our emotional body, and our physical body. If your physical body is stressed, if you have things going on in your physical body, then you need to pay attention to that and lovingly do whatever you need to do. I have friends who grew up with, you know, a belief that medicine wasn't okay. And they said, well, you know, Mary, I just don't believe in medicine. I said, well, that's a fine belief if that works for you. I said, I happen to have a sister that if it hadn't been for the medical profession, she would be dead. And she is alive. And I said, so I have a great regard for the medical profession and for medicine. I have a great regard. And I realize that divine order is always in place. That as polio vaccine was created, that was the divine order of that moment. AIDS came upon the planet, and there was much death until they got the right combination of medicines for people with AIDS. There are now wonderful things for people who have schizophrenia. There are wonderful things that are happening for people who have cancer and everything else that's going on the planet. And all of it has been created in divine order. Now how we use it and how we are one with it is a very different thing. Okay? It is how we allow what is unfolding to unfold. And I have said this before. In the world, there is much anger, and there is war, and there is deprivation, and there are just the most incredible things that are happening that are so less than love, we hardly know how to hold compassion for them. But that is our practice, that we will not condemn, and we will not judge. We will honor that divine order is always in place. And often, we will not know how it is going to unfold. How are we going to know that? That's actually not our business, is it? Our business is to have love and compassion for everything, all the time. I figure that's our job. We have to be really strong to do that job. Because so much will come toward us that we say, oh, is this what I'm to love now? Is this what I'm to have compassion for now? And if you have a belief that those folks over there, bad. And these folks over here, okay, good. I mean, I grew up with that. I was told, my mom said, the Japanese killed so many members of my family during the war that I have a very hard time with that energy. And I didn't know anybody who was Japanese. I had seen footage of the war, but I did not know anything about having that particular prejudice or that thought of judgment around it. And in the recovery period of Japan, there was a huge inpouring of American money and technology to have Japan recover. And they created a lot of things that were sent here to the United States to help them recover. And my mother said, I will never buy anything that is Japanese. I thought, well, boy, that's pretty strong. But it didn't resonate with me, so I said, well, that's not in my belief system. And some of you know of this experience I had. I was choreographing for summer stock one summer, and my roommate happened to be a beautiful Japanese girl by the name of Sueko Yamamoto. And when she appeared in the room, we were going to be roommates, I thought, wow, is this in divine order? I now get to find out exactly what's going on. So Sueko and I became very great friends. And she said one day, she said, Mary, I want to tell you what happened to my family after Pearl Harbor. And I said, please tell me. I want to know. They were in San Francisco. And after Pearl Harbor, the United States government sent troops into San Francisco and all over, anywhere in the United States, where there were Japanese living. And they took them out of their homes and put them in cattle cars, not unlike the Germans did to the Jewish population. Exactly the same, actually. And they loaded them into these cattle cars, and everybody, all the children, all the mums, dads, grandparents, everybody, they all got in these cattle cars. And they were so tightly smooshed together that you could not even sit down. And you had to urinate and defecate right where you were because there was no room. There was no water. There was no food. And Sueko's youngest sister, who was a very little girl, she died of suffocation. They were sent to what they call holding camps, which were really concentration camps. These camps were in the arid land of our western part of our country. And they had built these very temporary shacks, and there was very little food, very little water. They froze to death in the winter, and they died of dehydration in the summer. And this continued for the entire war. And many, many, many of the Japanese died. And then when the war was over, they had to make their own way back, by hook or by crook, back to where they lived. And so Sueko and those people who remained in her family went back to San Francisco. The government, of course, had then sold off all of their property, all of their businesses, and they came back to find they had nothing. And they all had to start again, however that was. And here was Sueko, who had been a very little child during all of this, and she had developed and grown and become an artist, and that's why we were in this room together. And I was so taken aback because I had a belief that the United States of America would never, ever do something like that. So I called my dad and my mom on the phone, and I said, my roommate has just told me a story that I cannot believe, and I want to know the truth of this. And my dad said, it is absolutely true. He said, we were in Australia. I was born in Brazil, so this was before my birth. They were in Australia, and he said, all the magazines and newspapers from America had been already censored, and they had everything cut out of every newspaper and every magazine that had anything to do with what was happening in the United States. So they never knew that this had gone on until they came back to the United States after the war began, and when the Japanese bombed Australia, that's when my parents and my brother and sister left, and we came back, I was born in Brazil later. And my father said, this is the most shameful act that the United States of America has ever committed. And he said, it is so shameful that nobody even wants to think about it or talk about it, and they have tried to hide it. And he said, but it is absolutely true. Some years later, I went to an exhibit of photographs that were taken. Maybe some of you all have seen that exhibit that was taken by the Japanese who did have cameras of the conditions and what was happening in these concentration camps. It was pretty horrendous. I share this with you because I had always had a belief that the United States of America was for the good and the right. You know, I really believe that. And that was such a huge realization for me, that any nation with this kind of power, through fear, this was all about fear. What is fear? The withholding of love from yourself or another. The fear was so profound in our government that somehow these beautiful Japanese folks who were living in the United States of America now had to be isolated, taken, put in these camps, and forgotten. So I have great compassion for all those who suffered in the concentration camps in Europe and all those who suffered in the concentration camps in the United States of America. And I realized that I had some beliefs that were not real. They were fairy tale beliefs. They were beliefs that all stories would turn out well. I had beliefs that, you know, the government was going to be tried and true and do the right thing. I believed that everything was, you know, rosy and wonderful. And on some level, it is rosy and wonderful, but it just doesn't happen to be in the physical all the time. What's happening on the inner is a whole different story. So if you look at the beliefs that you have, regardless of whether they're within you or beliefs that you have that are around the people in your world, to look at those beliefs and say, are they beliefs that nurture me and nurture the other? Or are they beliefs that separate me from myself and separate me from the other? Because most of the beliefs we have are about what? Separation. We have so many beliefs about separation. And then we wonder why the world is the way it is. That if we're practicing separation, why doesn't our government? Every time a war is caused, it's caused by fear and separation. We believe they're different and they're wrong and we have to do something about it. Well, actually, we have to take a look at that and say, what part do we play in that? Have we created separation between ourselves and another just in our daily life? Have we done that? I have. I have created separation between myself and another in my daily life. I don't want to do that. My practice is not to do that. And only because I knew that I did it, could then I say I can change it. If I have not been clear enough and honest enough with myself to know that I have also created levels of separation, do you understand? We cannot look at any country or any war and say, that's not happening there. Every single one of us in this room has had a battlefield going on right inside us. We have been at war, at least in some way or other, inside ourselves. And maybe that war is still going on. And we have some very interesting weapons, don't we? Tell you one of mine. And then you can tell me one of yours if you want. One of mine was sarcasm. I have an older brother and sister, and they wanted to have control over my younger sister and myself. And boy, did they know how to do it. They took that little old sarcasm and they just whipped us into shape. And it was just terrifying. But of course, I had to learn how to do it myself so I could get back at them, right? Does anybody know this? You know, brother or sister, perhaps you know what I'm talking about. And so I said, I'm going to learn how to be so sarcastic. Sharper than a serpent's tooth. I will have sarcasm that will strike, and they will know that I am here. Okay. I mean, I had it down, all right? And I saw that it was really awful. It was just awful. And I said, okay, no, nix, forget it. Let's rewrite that script. We all have the ability to not only hurt the other and hurt ourselves, but to create these levels of separation, you know? I love that thing in there, six spaces of separation between yourself and another person. 6 degrees. All right, 6 degrees of separation. Well, why do we want even 6 degrees, darling? You know, let's get a grip on this. We really want to be able to say that we, one of the teachings is, I am one with all that is. And it begins with the I am. And those of you who have done any studying of the esoteric teachings, the I am is I am God. You say, I am one with all that is. And if I am one with all that is, it means I can't have separation. And I have to look at why I've separated, how I maintain that separation, how I may not want to heal that separation, why I feel it's necessary. Something inside me has said, I need this separation. Who is that speaking? It is my ego who is speaking. My soul does not want separation. So if we have had separation from ourselves or another, whether they are family or friends or whatever it looks like, then for us to be able to say, then this is a place where I need to do what? Raise my vibration and be able to have that compassion, which is empathy for the other and empathy for myself. I know how hard it is to take sarcasm, because when it was directed at me by my brother and sister, it was very painful. And I wanted to do what? Get that same pain out there and give it to somebody else. I wanted to do that. Tit for tat, right? That's how I was raised, you know? Tit for tat, that's how you do it. Ooh. And I had to grow beyond that knowing that separation was going to be there. I don't choose that anymore. So if each one of us in this room had said, I have created separation between myself and another, then just ask a few questions. What am I getting out of it? Why do I continue to do it? How important is it to me? Since it is my ego that is maintaining that separation, then how much love do I need to bring to my ego so that it will no longer need to hold or maintain that separation? I am the only one who can heal separation. I am the only one who can do that. Each one of us in this room have said, in some way or other, we want to be whole. We don't want to be splintered. We don't want to be undone. We want to be woven in a place of consciousness that is so full and so rich and so meaningful that we no longer have to use any of the weapons that we have in here. Why? You know? Why do we want to keep... I mean, the Divine said to me, you have to get off this battlefield, and you may not look back, and you may not take any weapons. You leave everything on this battlefield, and you are gone forever, and you will never, ever step on this again. Are you ready to do that? And I said, no. I'm not ready. I still need these weapons. I feel so inadequate without them. The Divine said, fine. We'll talk again. Time passed. Are we ready? It was the third time I said, I'm ready. I can leave all my weapons. I will walk off this battlefield, and I will never step on it again. And I mean, if I embody 10,000 more times, I'm not going to be on this battlefield. Because what we do now influences all the generations, seven generations before us, and seven generations after us. So when I walked off, I said, I'm off. This is it. Ground zero. I'm there. And never again. Never again. It takes that kind of knowing within self, within who you are, the truth of who you are, your soul fullness, that allows you to say, I'm ready. And if you're not, that's fine too. This embodiment may not be about your getting off the battlefield, folks. This embodiment may be where you're saying, I'm staying on this battlefield. I'm going to find out what it is. I'm going to act it out. I'm going to be this thing because that's what I have come here to learn. This is part of my soul agreement. I'm going to work it. And if that's the case, then be about that business. Okay? But if you decide that this is not what you've come to do, that you've actually come to step off the battlefield, then this is your moment. And the belief that you're on it is just as important as the belief that you're off it. Because if I didn't know in my heart that I was on it, how in the world would I get off it? Do you understand? You have to know both sides of the polarities. You're either on the battlefield or off of it. And as I realized that, I said, then let me know all that I carry that is on that battlefield. Because I don't want, when I step off, I want to leave everything there and take nothing with me when I go and step away. Okay? So, that's a belief. A belief that you're on it and a belief that you're off it. Now, the belief that I'm off it is far more enlightened. It has a lot more light than being on it. But if that is part of what you're learning in this embodiment, then don't be rushing to get off of it. Be aware. Be aware. Your self-awareness is so important as you begin to move more and more and more toward that truth of your being that is so important. And what is the truth of your being? That you are God. All the time, 24 hours a day, and I don't care whether you're on the battlefield or off the battlefield, it doesn't change it. You're God all the time, 24 hours a day. Now, when you're on the battlefield, I can assure you, the divine is saying, ah, so we're on the battlefield. How interesting. It just watches. And whenever you decide to walk off the battlefield, the divine says, ah, you've walked off the battlefield. How interesting. It's all the same. You choose in every moment. You're here, you're there, that's it. But the belief is the thing that really changes it. The belief, not only that you can do that, but what will your life look like if you aren't there anymore? I can tell you what my life looks like. This happened several years ago for me when I said I'm off the battlefield, and everything started to change in my life. But it was very subtle. And if I wasn't paying attention, I wouldn't even have noticed it. But things began to change. Slowly, so I could get used to it. If it happened too quickly, I might say, whoops, wait a minute, that was too fast. Just slowly, easily, like the in-breath and the out-breath. They're two different breaths, and they each do perfectly what they're supposed to do. And if you are in the battlefield, you're doing a lot of in-breath so that you can have a lot of energy to do what? That out-breath that comes from the battlefield. Once you're off the battlefield, then the breath is very different. The breath now is a movement of consciousness that is very sublime, very subtle, very beautiful, and everything that comes unto you now is filled with that place of peace. Everything that comes unto you is filled with peace. You do not go into any situation, even if someone says, oh, you know, this is going to be a really difficult situation. I go, fine, because I'm going to go into that with peace because I'm not on the battlefield anymore. Mm-hmm. I can go in peace. Now, the four aspects that we talk about, love, light, peace, and joy. I've talked about the peace which passeth understanding, which means that it is no longer in the mental body, that you have taken the aspect of peace and you have filled yourself with that peace. And presumably, you have a practice that maintains that peace each and every day, however that is. It may be taking a walk in nature. It may be sitting in a sauna. It may be skipping rope. I don't know. Everybody has a different way of expressing what their peace is. But if your practice is to enliven and to be one with that peace through whatever your practice is, then that peace will only grow and become more and more and more. I knew that I had changed when I went someplace, and a woman turned to me and she said, you're very serene. I said, I beg your pardon? She said, you're very serene. I went, ooh, this is very far out. I don't even know what serene is. But I realized that part of what was happening was that, I call it the jitterbug energy, that jitterbug energy that keeps everything kind of going like this inside, it was gone. And what was there was a very deep peace that was just always, always, as I say, just like a fountain. It was just bubbling up in my consciousness all the time. So that whatever was happening, I could meet it in peace. And I could meet it in joy. And I could meet it as it was. Not saying, well, you know, I really don't like how you look. If you could just change that a little bit, I think I like you better. No. exactly how it looks, exactly like it is, that's it. That's the divine order that is coming toward me. And for me to be able to be with it is huge. This was a very, very amazing thing. And I had to really build a strong spiritual muscle. And I had to expand my consciousness tremendously, tremendously. Because I had been brought up to hold my consciousness like this and to measure everything by a very narrow parameter. Maybe some of you all know that. If it doesn't look like this, it doesn't fit in our family scheme of things. Okay, and I would use that. And then, after my beginning mystical experiences, I kept going, oh, gosh, can't it be just a little bit bigger, a little bit wider, a little bit. So when I needed to, I could go, whoosh, and the family would go, oh, she's all lined up with the family entity again. Isn't that wonderful? Look, she's just like this, like the rest of us. Isn't that fun? And the minute I was gone, I went, yeah, da 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 da. And people used to say, are you sure you weren't adopted? I don't see how you fit in this family. You must be adopted. I said, well, actually, sometimes I think I might be adopted. I hope y'all have felt that sometimes, You go, do I really fit here? What is this, But no, that is exactly the family that I said, I want to come into this family because I want to get it. I really want to get it, and boy, they will be relentless making me get it. And then once I've got it, then I can let go of it because I know what it is. If you don't know what it is, you can't let it go. You cannot transform that which you do not understand. And if you understand it, you can transform it. And you can transform it faster than I can click my fingers. It is so fast. But it is that level of self-awareness that you say, I need to be aware of what's going on inside me, not yet out there, just right here. And then, once I am clear here, I will be clear there. If I am not clear here, I will not be clear out there. And for me, clarity is one of the greatest gifts that we can give ourselves, how we can be clear. And in that clarity, the most incredible things can happen. So we seek the clarity from within. And then whatever we experience out there, it will have a reflection of that clarity back to us. Even if others say, I don't get what that is. And you say, well, I get what that is. And it's not up here that I'm getting it, folks. I'm getting it from here, from that sentient consciousness that's in me that says, this is it. You're clear now. You're clear about that. And I can feel that clarity. I feel it. I'm not thinking about, is it clear? I'm feeling that it is clear. The divine is in every single one of our cells. The liver cell knows it's a liver cell because that's what it is. And the liver cell is not jealous of your abdominal muscle. And your abdominal muscle is not jealous of the tip of your ear. It is not. Every cell perfectly knows where it is. It is clear in its function. And it does it so superbly that we get to be here in physical form. So why is it that we, once we're in this miraculous, incredible body, would we say, I want to be like that? why would we do that? Here it is. Here's the incredible, magical, wonderful mystery right here. Now we have to nurture it and take care of it and be kind to it and love it with such compassion and such honoring. And often we forget to do that. I wasn't taught that in my family. I had to learn that. I had to learn what it is to be so loving with my body. My body, every body in this room, is a sacred vessel. And what is in that sacred vessel is the divine. And if you do not take care of your vessel, where is the divine going to be within you? Where is it going to be? You are limited. But if your body is this vessel, you will do everything in your power, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, so that this vessel can hold the divine fully and express through you. The divine wants to express through all of us. And in any way that you want, you can choose, my goodness, you can choose exactly how you want to express the divine. So how do you do that? How do you do that, Laura?
I love my children.
All right. How do you do that?
I grow things.
How do you do that?
Creative expression.
How do you do that?
Well, love nature. Yes.
Okay. How do you do that?
Sacred things.
How do you do that?
You're right.
How do you do that? How do you do that?
Love every day.
How do you do that?
Through communion and meditation.
How do you do that?
Meditation.
Traveling and meditation.
Connecting people.
Joy.
Making jokes.
Ta-da! Which is color and form and shape and design and all those things. We all know how the divine will be moving and expressing through us, and it's not just limited to the things that we talked about, of course. I mean, if you just walk with joy upon the earth, you are absolutely expressing the divine. If you are aware, and this again is self-awareness, if you're aware of what is unfolding around you, you know, you're not just this, but you're this, you have a big picture of what's going on, the divine is moving through you. If you wake up in the morning, you say, another day, hallelujah, that's the divine. If you wake up and you go, oops, oh no. That is not it, folks. The day has come unto us so that we may express the divine which we are. And however we do that. Now, the next time you get in the car and you're on the freeway and somebody cuts in front of you, what are you going to do? Just love on them. We're not going to be angry. We're not going to have a hissy fit. We're not going to be, We're going to say, wow, they must be having a hard day today. Had to do that. We don't have to do that. I mean, it can be the littlest thing. Any of those things that happen to us. And instead of being reactive, what we do is allow. We allow for that. We allow for these things to unfold. And instead of reacting to them, and sometimes having to go on the battlefield and pick up a weapon, you know, that we're going to use, instead of doing that, we come to a whole other place within ourselves. And we allow the divine which we are to express rather than that which is less than love, which is really easy. It's so easy to express less than love. It's very easy to do that. We all grew up doing that. But we grow, and as we grow in our consciousness, the love which we are is that which we want to share. And we don't want the separation. Does anybody here really enjoy separation? I don't enjoy separation. Good grief. And one of the reasons, I believe, that we no longer want separation. I mean, it used to be that everybody would go to their rooms, you know, shut the door, and sometimes they'd do not enter, do not disturb. I mean, you know, that's how it was when we were all siblings. We just wanted separation. I want to be who I am. And we did. Okay, we became who we are. Now, isn't it interesting? The wheel has turned, and now we prefer to feel that we're at one meant with people, at one meant, one with them, not separated from them. Now this is a wonderful thing. The wheel has turned and our consciousness has changed. And now that the consciousness has changed, we're being asked to do more, not less. Oops, we have to be certain about that. It's never going to be less, it's always going to be more. But it will not be in huge lumps, in great increments. It will be thusly. The divine said, if you will only take one inchworm step a day, it is sufficient unto that day. Just one. But it means that you are fully loving, fully present, fully conscious, fully in at-one-ment. You are fully there. And that is a huge exercise. And once you get it once, then you can say, I want to do another one. Fine. And you keep practicing doing your inchworms. 1,000 inchworm steps, 1 quantum leap. And you know how big a quantum leap is? Yikes! But that's the deal, folks. It's this. To be so sure, so clear, so on purpose that every day, every day, every day. And then it really starts to change. So I honor that everybody sitting in this room comes in this room, because today, sitting in this room, what did we do? Everybody lift their finger. We did chakonka. All right. We did one of those dudes. All right. Now, it's not so hard to go, all right. Now, when we come to this part of our circle, the first thing that we're going to be doing is humming. And someone came to me at the beginning of the meeting, said, I really want to work with the heart energy. When the divine said, Mary, please ask everybody to hum, I said, you've got to be kidding. And the divine said, actually, no. The reason being is this. You see, I get all this information about why we're supposed to do this thing. When you hum, the vibration, you see, your lungs are right next to your back here, and they're right behind your heart. So every time you take a breath, you go, you're actually breathing in that divine consciousness, which is going into your lungs, which are back here, and your heart chakra, as you breathe in, you see your intercostal muscles, I used to study anatomy, your intercostal muscles open and expand, and so your rib cage expands as you, all right? Now, the heart chakra is not here. The heart chakra is the universe, but we pretend that it's here just for the sake of argument. Okay, so you breathe in. Now your heart chakra has had that breath. And then when you exhale, everything becomes quiet in preparation for the next inhale, okay? I was told that as you inhale, all right, here's the mother infilling you, the divine mother. And as you exhale, here's the divine father going out from you into whatever it is that you're doing. So you inhale the mother, and you exhale the Divine Father with every breath. So as we hum, the vibration of that hum comes from your lungs into your heart, and your heart chakra begins to do like this. And that vibration is very beautiful, and it goes out in 360 degrees, not just to the front. So if you are working on opening the heart and opening the heart chakra and deepening, really going deeply within the consciousness of who you are, because every cell of your body is waiting for you to acknowledge the consciousness which they are, then as you're humming and breathing, just see that consciousness going into every single cell of your body. And remember that the number of cells in your body is equivalent to all the stars in our galaxy. So that means that when you inhale, you're opening to all the stars in the galaxy, because every cell is alive with that in-breath of the mother. And then as you exhale, and you're sending it out into this galaxy of consciousness that is not only here, but is the galaxy of all the stars in heaven right this moment. That's cool. I like that. Okay. I'd like to make the calls, and then we will sit quietly. And then I will finish when the bell rings with a closing. Thank you. I'd like to make the calls. I call now for the light of the divine to create a perfect circle of love, light, peace, and joy around all who are present here in the physical and also on the inner planes. I wish to acknowledge and give thanks for all souls who've gathered to be with us, whether in or out of embodiment, and for the radiance in which we find ourselves. Thank you. I call now for the infilling and indwelling of the divine within all of our bodies, planes, and cells. I acknowledge and give thanks for this, and for the divine consciousness that is available to us 24 hours a day unceasingly. Thank you. I call now that we enter into the serene center of our being within our hearts, and there we enter the silence, allowing ourselves to fall more deeply still in love with the divine which we are. Thank you. And I open my heart, and I bring you, Gaia, beloved Mother Earth, into my heart. Thank you, Gaia, for the exquisite manifestation of divine love, which is expressing in you, through you, and as you. And thank you, Mother, for nurturing us and loving us through each and every one of our embodiments. Thank you, Mother. I love you. And I open my heart, and I bring you, beloved elementals of earth, air, fire, and water, into my heart. Thank you, dear ones, for the exquisite manifestation of divine love, which is expressing in you, through you, and as you. And thank you for your union and communion with Mother Earth, and your union and communion within every cell of our physical body, for without you, we could not live upon the earth plane. Thank you. I love you. And I open my heart and I bring the whole of humanity into my heart. Thank you, beloved souls. All souls who are in the embodiment now, thank you. I love you. All souls who are leaving the embodiment now, thank you. I love you. And all souls who are coming into the embodiment now, thank you. I love you. And to my soul, thank you. I love you. Thank you, dear beloved souls, for the exquisite manifestation of divine love, which is expressing in you, through you, and as you. Thank you. I love you. And I call now that the divine which we are gently open our eyes.